Welcome to KHMK Talk. We are totally blind musicians from Australia and New Zealand, respectively. KH, that's me. I'm a singer-guitarist with a focus on Americana.
MK, that's me. I am a folk singer-pianist and licensed Simply Music piano teacher.
In this podcast, we will be talking about alternative music from all decades.
We won't be covering 21st century pop music because we're too cynical and jaded. This is Mara Kelland, MK, and I'm in my living room in Auckland, New Zealand.
This is Kirby Harris, KH, from KHMK Talk, and I am in my living room in Devonport in Tasmania.
And today we are talking about ABBA and some other stuff.
Yeah.
We always talk about other stuff. But the first track we have picked to talk about is ABBA's Fernando, because we like it, and we hope you do too. So I like this song because I think the main reason I like this song is because of the introduction. There's something really new agey and hip and cool about that introduction.
Yeah, I'm the same. I love the intro. I think for me, what caught me particularly, you know, as a young kid, was the story of this person and these people doing things, you know, like protesting or whatever they're doing.
They were crossing the Rio Grande during the Spanish-American War.
Thank you. Yes,
that's what Wikipedia said. And I think
what?
That's what Wikipedia said.
Oh, good.
It's about the Spanish-American War.
Yes, I always thought it was about some conflict, but I didn't know what. Thank you. Anyway, that was what caught me. Yeah, I did. Yeah, that was what caught me about it. Was the story.
It's a good song, you know, with a good story, and like the other interesting.
But the chorus is crap.
But it's the crap chorus.
Sorry.
The chorus is really crap. And like it ruins the whole thing for me, this whole chorus thing, which is coming up in a minute.
Yeah. I actually listened to it and I, you know, before we started the show.
Yeah.
and I thought to myself, because, you know, like, I mean, I didn't agree with you yesterday, but I thought re-listening to it, of course, you know, before the show, I thought, yeah, you're right, because it kind of goes from, you know, the thing and, you know, the nice verses, and then it disappointingly goes, there was something in the air that night.
Nice,
really? I mean, you know, like, what was in the air, people? Well, there was gunpowder for a start. But, I mean, you know, it's quite a letdown, lyrically speaking.
It's a big. Maybe it's the translation. Maybe we listen to it in Swedish without understanding it. It would sound better.
Yeah, maybe it would. Did they even record it in Swedish? Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. I actually like ABBA singing in Swedish, and I have heard some of the stuff in Swedish.
In Swedish. First. Before I came to England. And Australia.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I think their first hit was actually in Australia, from memory.
Yeah, thanks to that bloody, thanks to Molly Meldrum.
Yeah, that woman.
He thought they were wonderful. Frankly, Molly Meldrum, I'm sorry to say, I know he was the countdown god here. For those people who might be listening internationally, countdown was, because it's not anymore, but it was an ABC television music program that
it's like
Australian
Top of
legend.
The Pops, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's like Top of the Pops in the UK, basically. And that's about all I know. But I mean, Countdown was the thing that everybody watched. All the people that were musically inclined watched it anyway.
Countdown on the TV every week. Was it every week?
Yeah, Yes.
I don't know about countdown because I don't think we have one here.
No, it was every week. It was sort of, yeah. And yes, and so anyway, it was Molly Meldrum's fault that ABBA got such notoriety in Australia. You know, so I mean, frankly, I think that was the worst thing you could ever have done. But anyway, that's me.
Anyway, you did it, and here is the chorus of the song. There was something in the air that night. The stars were bright, Fernando. They were shining. So that was one of us, and Kirby, you discovered something. What did you discover?
I actually did. I discovered that that the song is actually in two tenses, because the verses are in the present tense, and the chorus is in the past tense, in the third person. Well, half in the past tense.
Yeah.
And then half in the, you know, it kind of switches tenses in the chorus. Yeah. Which is interesting. It also does that in the second verse too, if my memory was to serve me correctly.
Now that's lyrically clever, and that song is
it actually is
well crafted. But it's too similar to that other song, "The Winner Takes It All." That's why I don't like it, because it's too similar.
Yeah. Well, it's similarly depressing.
Yeah, that's what I'm driving.
"The Winner Takes It All" is. I honestly think that "The Winner Takes It All" is the cornier version of "What Else," to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think I like it a little bit better, to be honest. But I don't like ever that much
song. Nor do I, to be quite honest. I mean, look, I don't really like ABBA that much myself, to be honest. So, you know, I mean, you know, okay, so our listeners may very well be asking, if you don't like them, then why?
Why are we writing a review? Yeah.
Well, because we know that there are a lot of people who like ABBA, and, well.
We thought we would get you listening to us by dragging you in with a sucker. Essentially,
yeah, exactly.
That's the blunt way to put it. We want to get people listening, so we're talking about ABBA.
Yes, but there are those few slight exceptions that we like of ABBA.
I know
that you mentioned that the little things off their most recent.
I didn't know what the hype was about until I heard the little things, and then I'm like, okay, there's hype around this. This is actually cute.
Yeah, you see, I listened to the whole album and went, this thing is an entire disappointment. And then when I finally heard the end of Little Things just before the show, I went, yeah, that's cute.
Yeah, that's cute. And there's not much more you can say about it. It's just a cute song, and it's, you know, nicely orchestrated with their typical finesse. And sort of minimalist, and it's cool. I like that song.
Yeah. It is the best song out of a bunch of crap songs. I mean, let's face it, the record's crap, right?
Yeah, the record is crap.
Yeah, I think, you know, when it first came out, and before that, I'd actually listened to a review on another podcast that I listened to. and I thought...
But everybody's all over it, so you had to check it out.
Yeah, I had to check it out because, I mean, like, but even their review was half negative, which I was glad about because I'm like, yeah, well, I can kind of see their point. And it was funny because then I checked it out that night, actually, and I thought, and their review didn't influence my opinion, by the way, because I'd already formed an opinion based on the fact that I don't like ABBA. So I wasn't really expecting that much. But anyway, I checked out, like, I don't know, like the first, I listened to the first track in full because I thought, well, you know, I'll, you know, give it the benefit of the doubt because it might be kind of cool. Anyway, I then, you know, after listening to the first track, so I'm like, yeah, okay. And then the second one, and then I flicked through the rest of it, and I was just like, what's all this hype about?
Yeah, that's how I feel about
it. I didn't get it. I was just that's just another ABBA record. Like, we'll pay. It's probably about as good as or bad as their last one, depending on your opinion.
But the stink thing about all the ABBA records is the best album is the ABBA Gold album, which has every single good song that ever, if there was a good ABBA song.
Yes, exactly. The stink thing is that for all their albums, you only really need one, and that was ABBA Gold, which came out in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got like, it's only like 19 or something.
20, I think, or 21 hits. Yeah. It's like, anyway, oh my god, like did they really have that ready?
Yeah, and it has all their best ones. So you really only need one album, people, of ABBA, and you've kind of covered their entire career, really, a bit.
Yeah, well, it wasn't very long, but for some weird reason, all those songs, you know, they just made them sort of timeless and made them into hits.
Yeah, but, I mean,
that's kind of what makes them into hits, is because they're about timeless things.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily the best hit in the world, but yeah.
No, they're not. No. I mean, and ABBA, well, I mean, you know, I don't really think that they're best band. I mean, Benny and Bjorn are fantastic musos. You know, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
They are. And it took me to see a live production of Mamma Mia to actually see that. And those songs that are in Mamma Mia actually do work in a musical. So you can see their theatre links even in their pop music. You know, you can tell from where they came from. But I mean, you know, as a production, I actually liked it.
Oh, was it good? I've seen parts of the movie. The movie sort of works, but then
it's okay. I mean, the storyline is a bit.
Neff. Is that the word you're
after? Yeah, it's a bit, you know, tried and true. This girl is trying to find her a real dad, and the mum doesn't know because she's getting married and what have you. It's a bit trite.
Yeah.
And they're obviously, you know, using their hits to sort of, you know, to bring out the plot, which, you know, which in itself is slightly corny. I mean, they could have written, you know,
But they wrote a bunch of new music for Voyager. What's it called? Voyager. Ever Voyager.
Yeah, Voyage, I think it is.
Oh, Voyage. Singular. Okay.
Yeah, Voyage, yeah.
Yeah.
But they didn't, and that's cool.
They made a bunch of money anyway, and we don't love them as much as we have should. So we were playing.
We don't love them. We really don't.
So we were playing The Little Things and Get Out of Everland for now.
You'd consider bringing me a breakfast tray, but there's a price. Little things like that happy noise. As a brand new day is dawning on this lovely Christmas morning, it's our children playing with their new toys. Little moments of happiness. This song is a song by a duo called The Secret Sisters, and they are actually sisters.
Are they?
Laura Rogers and Lydia somebody. Yes, they are. They're sisters. Yes, they're sisters. One of them is slightly older than the other one. I can't remember who now. I'd have to look it up. But anyway, yes, they are sisters. And this particular track comes off their 2019 album called You Don't Own Me Anymore. And a lot of their albums were about, you know, their lack of love lives, essentially. But because...
They're not making any music anymore?
Yes, they are.
Oh, they are making records. Okay.
But anyway, because when they were writing this record, they were kind of married and, you know, they'd gotten in with Brandi Carlile, who's great. Because one of them is married to one of her bandmates.
Oh.
Yeah.
Learn something new every day about these people.
Sorry?
Learn something new every day about these people.
Yes, well, Brandi, I mean, one of the secret sisters is actually married to one of Brandi Carlile's twins, Phil and Tim Hanseroth, and I cannot remember which one is married to which sister, but anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah, one of them is.
One of them is.
So Brandi produced both their 2019 and 2020 albums, both of which are very good. This track, Mississippi, is the second track off You Don't Own Me Anymore, and... when it first came out, I loved the track. I only heard the track because I was listening to Americana radio at the time.
It was the single, right? This is the single from the record, yeah?
Yes, it is. Yes, yeah, this is the single from the record. And so anyway, then I heard that Brandi Carlile had produced the record, and because I love her music and I knew that she was also producing Tanya Tucker's latest record, I thought, well, okay, I'll, you know, listen to this whole record.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, and that was my falling in love with the Secret Sisters as well. Point, essentially.
Sisters are very cool, but this song...
Yeah, they are.
To me is not as cool as some of the other stuff. And it's a bit... It's a beautiful vocal blend. It's a blend that just works. Yeah. And it's a well-crafted song, but it's just... It's too jarring or something for me. This is too... I'm not saying these things don't happen, but this is just too dark a song. And it's a hit. It's very amazing that it's a hit. It because it's like... Not promoting murder, but it's about something that we don't talk about.
Yes, it's actually about a guy who... he doesn't... The only thing he has that is his his daughter, because he loses his wife, her mama, as they say, lost your mama to the promised land. So you know, her mom dies, and he, you know, he sort of raises his daughter, and well, she
in the chorus falls in love with a guy, and then runs off to Mississippi.
Well, then tries to.
Attempts to.
So he essentially says, so he talks about how there's only two things that he knows, and I'm quoting song lyrics here, or paraphrasing song lyrics, but essentially he says, you know, that he loves her, but I would kill before I let you go. So you kind of get this hint that he's, that he wants to keep her, for himself, which he does, because you know he overhears them making these plans, his daughter and his daughter and her lover, so they're obviously making plans to elope. He kills her, and by the end of the song, you get this quiet hint of regret where he's kind of going, oh, you know, can you bring her back? And that's where the song ends.
That's why it's interesting, Faith. In short, that's why it's interesting, because, well, did he kill her, did he not? Maybe it's a metaphor?
Well, I think it is. Well, I mean, it could be. But it also does say, you're off to marry some rich man's son, but he'd never... but he'd never found a poor man's gun. So it's implying that, well, I'm going to kill him. And then, so obviously he kills them both. Although it's not actually that obvious. But anyway.
No, it's not.
But he talks about, you know, like seeing this gun. So there is a threat there.
Yes,
but by the end of it, you get this sort of hint of regret. Oh, maple tree, can your branches carry me? You know, he says, before the war, before the sun, before I stole what wasn't mine. And then he says, can you bring my, he asks, you know, can you bring my baby back to him? So.
Yeah. And I was like, I was surprised this is actually the single, because singles are normally a little bit more up-tempo than this record. But it's a very courageous single.
Look, it is. I fell in love with it initially because I loved the harmonies and I loved the blend. Like, the blend and the harmonies and the overall production of the track were what struck me eventually. And then I got into the lyrics, obviously, and then I ended up in tears over them because I just felt, wow, you know, such a... You know, it's such a profound song of love, possession, loss, and regret about the fact that, you know, you've lost your one and only, your one and only thing. That's yours, that you purposely took. So it's actually quite, for me... It's quite a profound story because it goes through all those emotions in 3 minutes. You know, he's angry because she's planning to run away. He doesn't want to lose her, so he kills them. And then at the end, you get him kind of going, oh, shit.
Yeah.
And
I love the ending part about the maple tree.
Yeah, yeah. That's his oh shit moment.
Yeah, that's his shit moment, and that's like the most interesting part of it for me because it's harmonically different from the rest of it.
Yes, it is. But the beginning of it is also the fact that they are actually in unison and then they split off.
Yeah. It's kind of cool, but it also reminds me of Indigo Girls. And I'm like, this band is sort of like Indigo Girls, but sort of not Indigo Girls.
Yeah, they kind of are. But their more recent stuff is actually different. I have actually heard them. It's called their later album on this is actually called Set and Return.
Oh, wow.
And it's really interesting. I think that both albums are incredible, but I mean, that's me. I mean, I'm a fan of Brandi Carlile's overall, including her production. Because I mean, you know, even though she was a new producer at the time, she still has relatively new to the period to the craft of production. You know, she certainly knows what she's doing,
definitely,
and you know, and I think, you know, for a woman to produce, it's quite rare.
Oh, yes. It is very rare. Unless they're doing their... I've only ever seen it. Unless they're doing their own records.
Well, unless they're doing their own record. But, I mean, but even, you know, Brandi Carlile produces her own records.
Yeah, and she has done for a very long time, so she must know what she's about.
But the fact that a woman is producing, you know, I mean, she's producing, you know, Tanya Tucker and... Well, she did produce Tanya Tucker. She and Sheeta Jennings produced that, actually. And the fact that she's, you know, obviously working in, you know, collabo with her sister-in-law. No, not her sister-in-law, her... Well, anyway.
Relative by marriage. Extended family. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Yes. Because, you know... Brandy and her band are literally family, so, you know, not blood related, but they are family.
Yeah. And
she calls them family, so I'm going to do that. So, you know, anyway. But it's, you know, it's very rare that this kind of thing happens. And, you know, I you know, obviously, you know, being a Brandi Carlile fan and not just a fan of her work, but a fan of her work with others. You know, it's, yeah, I just think it's a great overall record, and Mississippi, you know, is a great track. The other songs on that record are also equally as good.
I must check out the whole thing because I only checked out.
The whole record is yeah, it's just fantastic. But their overall work for the Secret Sisters is very cool.
Next week, we are talking about Broken Hearts and Dirty Windows, the songs of John Prine, Volumes 1 and 2, because they rock.
And excuse my French, but John Prine is an absolute fucking legend. And for those who do not know his work, for those of us who will encounter us who don't know his work, go and check him out, because...
he's good.
The guy,
he's good.
Yeah, yeah. The guy is a ledge. My musical DJ and my musical DJ and musical surrogate father Kent. He's been a John Prine fan for 20 years before everyone else got into him and. So he'll be mightily impressed. Oh, the fact that we're talking about John Prine. Anyway, hey, Kent, and next week, next fortnight,
We'll do that. So, see you guys later.
We'll see you later from our respective
living areas.
Yeah.